I'm Richard Carey, and welcome to the special recap of Charles Parker Day 2019 on Burst Radio. Charles Parker Day is named after the famous radio producer, Charles Parker. He, along with Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger, produced a series of creative and innovative programs called the Radio Ballads. These ballads look to capture the extraordinary in the ordinary workings of people's lives. This year, Charles Parker Day took place on what would have been Charles' 100th birthday, the 5th of April 2019. The day was held in Bournemouth, the town where Charles Parker was born, at the Lansdowne campus of Bournemouth University. Coming up in this Charles Parker Day special, I'll be talking to some of the guest speakers of the event, including Sam Bailey from the Audio Content Fund.
It was quite moving, actually, the affection that it's clear people in the room hold for Charles Parker and for his work.
Mohit Bakaya, BBC Radio 4's commissioning editor for factual programming.
And I think one of the joys of being a student program maker is you've got that opportunity where the canvas is totally blank and you can do whatever you like.
And folk musician Ken Hall will be demonstrating a Revox tape recorder.
It runs at 3¾ and 7.5 inches per second, half track stereo.
That's all still to come. Plus, we'll be finding out who are the winners of the Charles Parker Prize for Best Student Radio Feature. First, though, I spoke to Sam Bailey. He was in attendance to launch the Audio Content Fund, a new public fund used to finance radio content that is broadcast on commercial and community radio. Sam is also a Bournemouth University graduate who built the very first Burst website. He is the managing director of the Audio Content Fund, who, in addition to launch, sponsored lunch at Charles Parker Day. I caught up with him during that busy lunch hour, and I started by asking what he thought of the day so far.
It was quite moving, actually, the affection that it's clear people in the room hold for Charles Parker and for his work. The sessions, mostly this morning, were unapologetically enjoying the sort of craft of his radio, and that was really quite touching. And then I think this afternoon we're going to be talking more about where it's leading us, and it's really good that the Audio Content Fund is part of that conversation. What we want to do is fund innovative approaches to radio production techniques and formats that are fit for commercial radio and community radio in 2019, but which are also future-facing and recognise sort of the golden age of audio that we're in at the moment.
So speaking of the Audio Content Fund, if someone wanted to get involved pitching for money for that fund, how would they do that?
Well, start by checking out our website, audiocontentfund.org.uk. The gist of it is that it's money that independent production companies apply for. If you're a producer that doesn't have a relationship with a company, that would be where I would start, to kind of share your ideas with established production companies. They can then bid for the funding. They then need to form a relationship with a community or commercial radio station to get a guarantee of broadcast letter. Pull all of that information together, you make the bid on the website, and the funding panel meet 3 times a year to make the decisions, and the content then has to be broadcast on the radio within 12 months of that.
So obviously your Audio Content Fund's quite new, so what attracted you to to move to that role?
I've always felt part of a wider audio radio sector, mainly through my connections with the Radio Academy, of which I'm a trustee now. I've been at the BBC for 14 and a bit years, mostly working at Radio 1 for the last sort of decade and a bit, and more recently doing quite a lot of commissioning with Radio 1. So I got a taste for sort of working with independent producers through that commissioning role. I saw this as an opportunity to do some good, really, and I think we're already seeing that the Audio Content Fund is a force for good in the industry. It's forming relationships that might not have otherwise been formed. You know, you've got production companies talking to radio stations that they might not have otherwise needed to have a relationship with. I hope that we'll start to see more output like that, sort of producers that would have never had an opportunity to produce, young people and new voices coming through, more distinct content and more representation. So yeah, I saw it as an opportunity to build on the work that I've been doing at the BBC, which of course has very high sort of standards of public value, and try to carry those on whilst understanding and learning more about commercial radio.
Brilliant. So we did mention before about how you were involved with Burst to start with the website. Can you tell us what your involvement was and how that came about?
Well, I was a media production undergraduate, and we were making audio, making video, doing Photoshop version 1, as I mentioned, and bringing it all together on screens In those days, it was we were using a program called Director, and then later on it was Flash. This was before you could really distribute media on the internet. I graduated, or finished the course, and then had a job at the university for a couple of years as a technical demonstrator. So there was an MA journalism course, and we taught them all how to hand code HTML. It's a kind of vast majority of journalism now is online. I doubt they hand code HTML at Trinity Mirror, but that's, you know, it was quite ahead of its time in sort of saying to these journalists and media production students that digital is where your content is going to be. You need to understand the platforms that your audience are going to be consuming things on. And we're there in 2019 now, where the idea that a university would form an internet radio station in 99, 2000 was bonkers, really. I also thought it's fascinating. I've had a relationship with the Student Radio Association for some time as well, working with them on their awards and so on. And Bournemouth was one of the few universities that had two student radio stations, effectively. There was the, you know, student radio station that I was a presenter on in the 90s, Nerve Radio, Nerve FM. It was when we weren't on all the time, we just did RSLs twice a year, and I presented on Nerve FM, playing nonsense music and talking crap in between the records, and that's wonderful. But then Burst was completely different. It was a sort of Radio 4 and Radio 1, and there were, I don't think there were any other universities that had two student radio stations. I don't know if there are, but I was always very proud when I was at the Student Radio Awards that Burst would win things like Best Factual, and then Nerve would be nominated in, you know, things like Best Specialist Music, things like that.
Special thanks to Sam Bailey for taking the time to talk to me. You can find out more about the Audio Content Fund at audiocontentfund.org.uk. This is a Charles Parker Day special on Burst Radio, and we were delighted to be joined on the day by Mohit Bakaya, the commissioning editor for Factual at BBC Radio 4. Mohit was in attendance to talk about how Radio 4 are finding new audiences through factual programming and podcasts. Mohit has been very supportive of the Charles Parker Prize, offering a broadcast slot on Radio 4 to each of the five winners this year. I asked him how this opportunity came about.
Andy Cartwright, who runs co-runs the day, approached me and said, look, it's the 100th anniversary of Charles's birth. Do you want to do something different? And I thought and I feel very strongly documentary making is an incredibly important form, and I want Radio 4 to feel like it's part of the push to kind of encourage a whole new generation to kind of take the documentary, love it, and reinvent it and keep it going in a way that, you know, Charles did when he first kind of came out with the radio ballads. And so we decided to get together and actually offer airtime on Radio 4 to the best five entries, which was both, you know, a bit of a risk, because obviously Radio 4, you know, the stakes are very high. Obviously the quality has to be of a certain order for it to go in front of our audience, but a really exciting challenge to be able to kind of see if we could find five student entries that would meet that benchmark. And actually they have done. They've been brilliant, and I've been amazed by the quality of the entries this year, and we're going to put them out later in the year, and that's really exciting.
Okay, you mentioned that benchmark. Could you tell us a bit more, like, what you look for in factual programs when you're commissioning?
I'm looking for ideas which unlock the universe, that find new ways of telling stories about the world we live in and helping us understand them. And I think you build a bridge between truth and wonder. They're things that actually not necessarily confront, but challenge or help us rethink our way of looking at the world. I much prefer a documentary which will challenge me and the way I see the world than simply reconfirm how I think about it. And also, I think, particularly in this world of 24/7 news, there's so much rushing past us. The documentary and the factual documentaries for me are the ones which just pause, don't accept simple narratives, accept the world is more complex than maybe sometimes news coverage can make it out to be, and allow me in with a kind of a depth and a kind of beauty which allows me to understand stories and what's going on in the world in a different way.
Obviously, we've had quite a lot of changes in recent times in the audio landscape, with things like podcasting emerging. How do you think that's impacted Radio 4? From a factual perspective?
Amazingly, and you may be surprised to hear me say this, I think it's been an incredibly good and positive force for us. I think we've, for a long time, Radio 4 was the only real speech radio game in town. If I'm honest, I think that made us a little complacent. I think what podcasting has done, an explosion of podcasting and new ways of telling stories, and the fantastically exciting fact that audio is now, despite all the predictions of audio's demise, you know, is thriving, and young people particularly are finding podcasts and finding new ways of listening to stories about the world. I think it's made us rethink how we tell stories on Radio 4, and I think it's really reinvigorated curated documentary storytelling on Radio 4. And I think I've just sat across what I think what the best year of ideas and programs that I've sat across since I've been a commissioning editor. And next year, I think we're going to have an even better year. So it's been incredibly positive.
What advice would you give for any prospective radio producers who may be looking in the future to make stuff for Radio 4?
I think the most important thing is don't try and interpret what you think the idea of a documentary is. Make the documentary that's in your heart and in your head. And I was a documentary maker and program maker before I became a commissioning editor. And the first ever documentary I made, which was a long time ago, sometime in the 14th century, was the only one that ever won a Sony Award for me. And the reason it won a Sony Award, I think, is because I didn't know what the rules were. So I didn't know what the conventions were. I didn't have any sense of the formula. So I broke all the rules without quite realizing it. And once I learned what the rules were, it was much harder to do that. And I think one of the joys of being a student program maker is you've got that opportunity where the canvas is totally blank and you can do whatever you like. And I think hold on to that spirit of innovation and challenge, and don't try and second guess what you think other people want. Tell the story as it, you hear it in your head.
That was Mohit Bakaya, commissioning editor for Factual at BBC Radio 4. One programme that Mohit commissioned was called The Ballad of the Blade. This was a moving ballad-style radio feature about knife crime, and at Charles Parker Day, we heard how the feature came together. You can still listen to The Ballad of the Blade on BBC Sounds. This is a Charles Parker Day special on Burst Radio with me, Richard Carey. Still to come, we'll be finding out the winners of the Charles Parker Prize. Plus, we'll have an exclusive rendition of one of the songs featured in Charles's radio ballads. But before we get to that, it's time to catch up with Ken Hall. Ken is a folk musician and avid follower of the work of Charles Parker. At Charles Parker Day, he talked about several different radio programmes that Charles produced. He also did a live demonstration for us of a Revox tape recorder, the same editing equipment Charles would have used to make the radio ballads. So here's Ken to run us through how it all works.
Starting from scratch then, tape onto the supply turntable, so, and to do right you click it into position, which locks it on the turntable to prevent it sliding off, and if the machine was in a vertical operation position, then it stops the spool from falling off. Yeah, my name's Ken Hall. I've been 50 plus years in folk music, and I've worked in theatre, radio and TV for a little bit more than that. This is a Revox tape recorder. It's a B77 Mark I for the experts. It runs at 3 3/4 and 7.5 inches per second, half track stereo. This little post here, it senses the speed that the tape is going through, feeds it back to this thing here, which is the capstan, which keeps the speed running at a constant velocity. If the speed doesn't run at constant, you get something called wow and flutter, which means that the speed of what is being said varies, but at the same time the frequency of what is being said varies, and that is something that a lot of people will have had experience of where trying to make a tape recorder function. So we've got the tape passing through the heads, starting with the roller on the left-hand side. The erase head, which will erase any signal from the tape that might previously be on. The record head, which records the new signal. And the replay head, which replays the signal immediately it's being recorded. And that allows the listener, the recordist, to ensure that the quality of the sound is as good as it possibly can be, because there is an optimum level at which sound can be recorded, which is known as 0 dB, or calibrated as 0 dB. Sometimes the calibration change depending on the studio, but there is a limit beyond which distortion occurs. In digital recording, it will be called clipping, which sounds like scrunching up a crisp packet. In audio analog recording, it's more like crackling, but it's popping and noises that mean that you can't distinguish what's being said. To operate it, you then press the play button. So, just a minute, I'll tell you in a moment. Should be coming now.
John Axon was a railway man. to steam trains born and bred.
First minute and a half of the Ballad of John Axon, which has in the first 1 minute 45 seconds there are 9 splices. So you've got a verse of a song.
The Iron Way. He lost his life upon the track one February day.
A piece of actuality, the railway workers talking.
Still dark when I got to the shed that Saturday morning. Jack was waiting there. Come on, Ron, he said, we want to get finished.
And then we had a music chord played. Then we had some more actuality.
What engine have we got?
51-88.
All ready.
Right.
A sound effect of hammer blows, 4 hammer blows. And then following that, there was a steam whistle. And it went straight into verse 2 of the song.
You sign on at the loco shed, they put you to the cleaning.
So you can easily edit a tenth of a second out of that. And that was one of the techniques that Charles used. You could time something to a beat. And if you're using a metronome and you know what it is, say it's crotchet 120, something like that, then you can equate that to a specific amount of tape, which means you can actually take a beat out, add a beat, a chord, and that means that you can very easily edit just as accurately as you can on digital editing now.
Where have you been for that aisle? Arabia?
See the job on number 3.
It was really interesting to hear from Ken there. I have a real appreciation for the old ways that radio was created before this digital technology came along. There's a real craft to it and a lot less margin for error. And you heard a bit of audio in there from the first radio ballad that Charles Parker produced called The Ballad of John Axon, created alongside Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger. Now for the moment you've been waiting for, the results of the Charles Parker Prize 2019. 5 students were offered a broadcast slot on BBC Radio 4, and the following programmes will be aired on the network in August. They are The Flapper by Bruce Guffrey from the University of the West of England, Beyond the Ballot by Rosa Eaton, who's also from UWE, My Life After Grenfell by Rhys Gunter from the University of Westminster, Kidnapped by Henry Stoke from the University of Salford, A Young Cell in a Small Town by Sean Medford from the University of West London. We also found out on Charles Parker Day that the other 5 student radio features that were nominated will be broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra. That's amazing news. Here are those features. Involuntary Celibate by Eddie Scott from Goldsmiths, University of London. Make the Cut by Faith Waddell from Goldsmiths, University of London. Unwritten Letters by Sam Ross from the University of Sunderland. The Lonely Death of Janet Parker by Lucy Ryan from Birmingham City University. And Where I Was Born, Where I Was Raised by Jordan Curtis Blythe from the University of Sunderland. All those features will be broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra, but there's also another award, the Gold Award for the Charles Parker Prize, and that went to Sian Medford for her feature, A Young Cell in a Small Town. We caught up with Sian to talk about her documentary and how she found out about being nominated.
So when, like, I got the call, I was, like, eating my Chinese at the time, so I didn't expect it at all. But now that I'm here, I kind of feel like it's a bit surreal, like, I'm not meant to be here because, I don't know, I didn't think anybody would really listen to my documentary. It's called A Young Cell in a Small Town, and it's basically about my mum growing up in Wales. Obviously, Wales, as you know, is a European white town, and she was, like, a very minute Afro-Caribbean. So it's just her and, I think, like, 2 other family members that were actually black in Wales at the time. We take a trip to Wales and she just talks about like how he was growing up. We visit family members and they just talk about how they felt growing up in Wales at the time. My mum always taught me like, okay, so just because you are black doesn't mean that you can't achieve everything everybody else has. I came from a town where there was literally 2 families. So I think from that I was just like, you know what, I wanna let her tell her story. Nobody hears it. Might as well do it about it and like educate people, I think. That was it.
That was Sian Medford, the winner of the Charles Parker Prize 2019 Gold Award. Thanks for joining us for this Charles Parker Day 2019 special on Burst Radio. A big thanks to Andy Cartwright, Sean Street, Joe Tyler, Nina Perry, Alex Wegman, Andy Higginson and the Charles Parker Trust for all their help with organising Charles Parker Day and also helping with this programme. And thank you to Sam Bailey, Mohit Bakaya, Ken Hall and Shah Medford for taking the time to talk to us. So we couldn't leave you without a bit of music that became a defining part of the radio ballads. Charles's granddaughter Charlie has gained fame in her own right by appearing on The Voice UK. Here she is with Jimmy Ewing, the winner of the Charles Parker Prize in 2013, performing one of her favourite tracks from the radio ballad, The Travelling People.
Born here or a thousand miles away, the better, born in someplace else. So move along, get along, move along, get along. You better get born in someplace else. So move along, get along, move along, get along. Go, move, shift.